Good morning. Today is Monday, March the 8th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Chris Hartley.
Good morning, sir. Happy Monday.
You must have an appointment today.
You know, we have an appointment every day. It's a full day.
The jacket thing. Oh, wait. It's supposed to be raining today.
Well, yeah. It's have you been outside? It's cold.
Yeah, I was. middle of replacing decking.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, not new. Not when it's fun, replacing decking.
Brand new stuff.
Yeah, so I had a little bit of cleanup I didn't do last night. So it was Angie's birthday yesterday, so
we're doing
some runaround a little bit earlier, and it was like, you know, if I leave it out, it's really going to get bad really fast in 3 days. No. So I was out there. You could feel, the rain's
coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. Well, you'll be able to get back to that project. I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
Later this week. later this week. well, you've got a full notepad there, so let's start.
Let's get
the basics out of the way here. Now, this one, you're kind of a history geek, so this one should work. Ever wonder why barbershops use red and white and blue poles their symbol?
I do not know. I have no clue even where to start with that one.
Remember Barbara Seville?
Help me out here. Come on.
Bloodletting? All right.
Yeah, blank stare, everybody.
Yeah. In the late 1700s, barbers not only gave haircuts and shaves, but also pulled teeth, performed minor surgery, and did bloodletting.
Oh, Lord.
You never saw that Saturday Night Live skit with Steve Martin?
I missed that one.
Oh. Look up.
Now I'm going to have to find it.
Yeah, you'll find it. During the bloodletting, patients were instructed to hold onto a pole in such a way as to cause the veins in their arm to swell and the blood to flow freely. This pole was usually painted red to hide the blood splatters, and when it was not in use, it was left outside to air. Around the pole were usually wrapped white bandages, which were also put out to air. Thus, the red and white combination soon became to be a symbol of barbershops. After barbers no longer did bloodletting, someone got the idea of using a painted red and white pole as the barber's symbol. Blue was added to the poles in America around 1900, probably to match the colors of our flag.
I wonder when the last bloodletting occurred.
You know,
I've had my ear nicked once. It wasn't quite the same experience.
Yeah. you hear of, you know, that some people doing that still, and it's like, and you get, you know, obviously you get a little woozy.
Talk about a one-stop shop.
Yeah, this would be more than what our buddies at the blood bank do.
Full-service barbershop.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Oh, boy.
I can't believe you just turned to that page randomly. That's perfect.
Sequential.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So the governor and the state are throwing, $6.6 billion?
Yeah.
Holy cow, is the teachers union powerful and influential.
I mean, this came out.
Massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a substantial amount of money, no doubt about it. And it first was kind of announced that this is the direction when the governor had his Safe Schools opening plan that he announced in December. And so the money's been, that allocation was there even then. Where it got interesting is in the legislation got involved and his plan went sideways because it had a lot of conditions that just were absolutely impractical for schools to even put into place. So they've been negotiating since then, and on Friday they finally sealed the deal. He signed off on two bills, the Assembly Bill 86 and Senate Bill 86. And so the $6.6 billion is divided into two categories. One is the $2 billion is allocated to encourage the reopening of schools and to incentivize that. And the other $4.6 is on the extended learning and intervention, ongoing efforts outside of just reopening.
All right. So obviously we've got a couple of topics
here we get to
jump into.
Yep.
Encourage opening. Now, one of the things that is intriguing, I think, for a lot of us is there are schools that have not shut down.
Absolutely.
There are schools that are still in
since
play,
the fall.
Just rocking and rolling, going through. Mm-hmm. Are they at a disadvantage now? Do they not get any funding or any attention because they've been open? They've been doing the job.
They are certainly eligible for the funding, Brian, and it's a really good point that you bring up because this is one of the key areas that we've been advocating and fighting for is whatever you do, please don't penalize the folks that have been open, right? And there were elements of the agreement that could have made it very difficult for a school district who, say, has been open since October to stay open. Some of the requirements that have been since then negotiated away were to require testing, COVID testing for all teachers and students on a like twice a week basis or once every two weeks.
Yeah, there were some.
So that would shut our schools down that are already open and have proven that they can do it safely, right? So those things have been negotiated and resolved so that it's not a requirement.
Well, what tests? Were they going to come up with these tests and who's going to administrate it? And then it kicks those that haven't gone through the protocols or should or need to. We are at the end of the line.
And at HCOE, we saw a lot of the writing on the wall a few months ago, and we actually have a testing protocol and opportunity in place for any district that wants to participate outside of public health.
So you bought all the machines?
It's through Valencia Labs, and it's a self-administered test, and we actually are using kind of a car. You get in your car, and you drive through the car situation, and you test yourself, and the results go off to the lab, and that's up and running right now for districts and HCOE employees. And so we're happy to have that available, you know, to kind of have that cadence testing, that surveillance testing in place. But there was no way that would have the capacity to test all staff and students, you know, that would just absolutely couldn't do it.
Or if every school district had to do that,
the
guys you're with, there's no chance.
So that was an important element to have resolved. And so they pulled back off of that, and we have reasonable guidelines actually to implement for these funds.
I guess what's frightening for most of us is that it got to that point and nobody said, hey, wait a minute.
Well, yeah.
Time out here. You know, let's really think this thing through just for 30 seconds.
Well,
we could come up with that one.
It's classic government. I mean, we got the announcement from the governor's office in December of all these criteria that he was going to have, and without any consultation. So we were, you know, advocating like crazy right out of the gate. And it was a really collaborative process throughout the state with districts and our associations.
So he didn't dig his heels in on it?
Or he
got overwhelmed?
He got overwhelmed, and the input was all consistent and, you know, very vigorous discussion. So,
and logical.
And 100% logical.
Heaven forbid logic enters into this thing anywhere in this process. So that's one of the bills that was part of the bill that got passed on
that's
Friday.
That's correct.
And we'll talk about where the big money went.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, okay. The bigger money went when we come back.
It's 8:19. Big money.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley. So, Chris, the $2 billion of the $6.6 that was passed by the state for schools to basically get the schools back up and running again. You said that was something that the rules were kind of reset so everybody's treated the same, whether the school had been operating or hadn't been operating, or the district had been operating or the district hadn't been operating. What changes should we experience here? I mean, obviously the school boards still have to do their thing, but are you anticipating significant changes? You know, when mom and dad drop junior off, are they going to see anything different, or are the kids going to have to go through any different protocols?
It's a great question.
What are they looking at?
So on the $2 billion for the reopening, first thing I want to just clarify, that'll get allocated to schools based upon the traditional funding on how they receive their revenue. So they're going to use the same structure that we get when we're funded normally. So there's no unique formula, and that's a good thing.
Is that enough for the small little guys to have anything or not?
Well, it'll be a per student basis. So their proportion certainly
isn't. Well, like a Garfield, are they going to get?
Yeah, sure. It'll be
a couple bottles of squirt juice and call it done?
It'll be a little more substantial than that. Okay. It'll help everybody to continue with the safety protocols that I think you're referring to. Like when the students come to school, you know, it's going to be different. You're going to have COVID safety protocols that we've had in place for, can you believe it, Brian, almost a year now. We're coming up. This is March. Last year, March 16th.
I've got my own little demarcation that was right about a day earlier.
You know, this is the we definitely know what health and safety protocols need to be in place. So that might be different for them. It might not, depending on what school they've been a part of, because to some degree.
Well, sure, if some of them are already practicing it.
But you'll have those things, and the staffs are certainly trained. The teachers and all the educators are trained on the different protocols to use, all the way to maintenance and your classified and your custodians and your transportation and driving the bus. All of that is a bit different, but not really, because we've been doing this for a year to some degree.
Yeah, if somebody's open.
Yeah, you know, so those are probably practices that we'll see in place for a long time. I mean, if you just look at health and safety, protocols, it's going to be kind of a new way of doing business in schools to some degree.
Some of the folks that do the wipe downs, you know, all the time. I can't, a classroom, there's so many different surfaces. Could you do misting?
There's different products out there. There actually is a product like that. It comes in an aerosol, like a spray.
Yeah, that would seem to be, probably save somebody 10 hours a night per classroom.
We use those products actually typically at the end of the day, because you want to have some time for it to dry and lose its exposure. It's kind of like fumigation, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But those have been used. We use them on our buses, and we do use them in some of our classrooms as well.
Okay.
But this bill the idea is that schools should be back in session by April 1st. And if you're in the red tier, which Humboldt County is right now, the expectation would be that all elementary grades, K-6, would be reopened. And at least if you're running a middle school or a high school, at least starting with one grade level and then phasing in from there. So all of them.
They can do it step if that's what's
It's a little more complicated with the higher grades than it is the K-6.
Just because they're more free-spirited?
Well, you have more classroom. Well, there's free-spirited. I don't know. I've seen some pretty free-spirited elementary school kiddos.
True.
But you have more, you know, movement between classes, whereas in the K-6, you can put them in a cohort, and they kind of stay together all day with the same teacher, same group of kids, whereas high school, you could be going between multiple classes, seeing different kids throughout your day. So it's a little bit different in that regard. But that's the expectation for that, and the conversations I'm hearing, you know, in Humboldt County with our districts, it's very exciting. You know, you hear of a lot of plans to go ahead and to start reopening, and those board meetings are happening now, and they're having those conversations. What does that look like? What are the logistics behind that? And, you know, it's a really big step in the right direction.
Now, anecdotally, we've heard stories about, as you see in the community, you got those that are going, okay, fine. And those that are just freaked out and they drive with gloves in their cars with windows
and a mask
rolled
on.
Up and a mask. Yeah. That whole spectrum probably is represented in staff and faculty.
Absolutely.
Also. So for those that are at the most concerned end, is any of this going to be something that they feel comfortable with, or is it going to come down to a you need to, or take a sabbatical or find a different career?
No, we want learning to be able to happen in our schools, and folks need to feel comfortable about that environment. So districts will continue offering distance learning options, you know, for those families.
Simultaneous?
That, I'm sure of it.
Well, I'm thinking the teacher rather than the family. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But if the instructor themselves says, I don't think so, that's a different dynamic.
That's a different dynamic for sure. And that's really handled between each district and their staffs independently. In some cases, if you have somebody, maybe they have a medical situation, that's a great person for distance learning. So have that teacher work with those students who are choosing to be in distance learning as well.
Now, can you just throw a camera up in the classroom, and that's your distance learning? You know, you got Teacher Bob up in front, and he's doing whatever he's doing. You got the kids there in the classroom, and some kids watching at home.
That certainly can be a portion of it. I mean, that's not a new thing, to be honest with you.
No,
we've done that type of instruction before. So
I think that's called Big Superintendent instead of Big Brother.
Or both.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, for sure. Those types of instructional models have been happening for a long time, actually. So you could do that if you chose to. You know, they also have the online curriculum that they're utilizing, and frequent check-ins, that sort of thing. But basically, you know, those accommodations can be made, and I know schools want to connect with all the students the best that they possibly can and give them those options. So that kind of goes.
So it
to
really
the,
will be a flexible period of time.
Oh, it
this
has
next
to be.
Little bit.
It has to be. You know, we're really hopeful that in the fall we're back to business as usual, right?
Or something recognizable.
Yeah, what is usual anymore? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley, Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, the Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Chris, for the first half of the show, we were talking about the little bit that was towards
reopening
school sterilization.
No,
that's that one spins out today, huh? But you said that the other part was for extended education, and that was two-thirds of the total of the 6.6. Yeah. What is the extended doing, what has been done, but maintaining those, I guess, the equipment, the competencies, the program registrations, all that kind of stuff so that it can continue into the future?
Yeah, those would be certainly components of what a school could design into it. So this is the $4.6 million that's extended learning. And
I think you used M word.
Oh, well, let's make sure we get that
right.
But it's also extended
Carl
learning.
Sagan.
Exactly. And it's also for intervention efforts. The way they've got those funds divvied up is 85% of what a district receives must go towards the in-person instruction and on-site learning. And you can pull 15% to support those distance learning efforts like you and I were just talking about in the last episode there, where parents might still be using a distance learning program, so you can still keep that going. But, you know, you look at intervention efforts around, obviously we've talked about special education needs a lot. How do we get back in touch with those students where they're at? We are really, have been all along, very concerned about the mental health of how kids are doing. You know, and so checking
that,
in
that
with
is
that.
Really mainstreamed, hasn't it? I mean, everybody's talking about the lost generation, the 100%, lost year.
Yes.
Are you starting to see signs of psychological,
sure,
you know, some of the pressures and,
well,
and things like that?
Lack of productivity among students, lack of ability to focus and learn in that environment. That is not for everybody, right? And so we are very excited to get back to in person so we can see the whites of their eyes and work together and reestablish those connections with the kids. And so we know that there's going to be some needs for support there.
So it doesn't sound like staffing. That sounds like something else. What are some of the tools in that toolbox?
I think it is staffing, you know, to be able to have some funds available to perhaps contract services if you need to, or hire additional folks that can work with students on an intervention level, tutoring services, paraprofessionals.
Intervention can be sports, too.
It can be sports and athletics, clubs,
after-school
activities, summer school. You know, if you're looking at mitigating learning loss, having a summer school program where you actually could have some funding to do some of that work now. All of these things.
Now, this is on a school district by school district basis rather than the county.
And they just have to submit a plan by June 1st so they can start working on that and, you know, have a plan that just needs to be on file. The nice thing about these programs is there's really not a ton of bureaucracy yet tied to the funding. You know, you need to have the plans in place. You need to be working with your stakeholders. And honestly, you know, with some of these this extended learning stuff, you should be reaching out to your families and asking them, hey, what is it that you need? What are some of the gaps?
Really?
And a lot of our districts have already done it. Yeah, they're like, please, give me a break. You know, and so that's a big part of gathering the data around what the children and the youth are going to need, right?
Actually, I'm kind of surprised. Well, no, I'm not. I'm less than excited that the state didn't say, okay, since there's been this lag and everybody's right. in the teaching and everybody recognizes the psychological impacts that some of the student bodies are dealing with, summer school is on this year, guys. Not an option. Summer school is on. We have to recapture. We have to catch up, and maybe some will be ahead. Great. But if somebody's behind, it won't be as far behind. So you don't lose the entire year. Maybe you only lose a third of that learning period of time and just push it down the system.
Yeah, so requiring that as a mandate would cause some issues with districts in their bargaining units. And so since that's a contracted year.
They couldn't do it?
Yeah, you couldn't. The state couldn't mandate that because districts bargain.
Highly encourage?
Own. Well, I think that's what the funding can do, right? And that's what those districts can kind of look at, what they're able to pull off in summer school. And it's, you have to also keep in mind, in Humboldt County, you know, we have such a diverse population in our districts. You have some very smalls, and then you have our largest one with Eureka City. And how they can run after-school programs and summer school is very different. So you have those dynamics that districts have to work through as well. But the great news is they have opportunities to start to design those programs.
At least choice.
Yes, yeah. And we have some choice, and it's funded choice. So it really opens up a lot of possibilities for districts that it's well due in this time period. Everybody's very excited about it.
Probably not too many experts or consultants or advisors in dealing with something like this. Do you know when was the last time that there was a prolonged time when school was shut down? I mean, the floods and earthquakes, okay, that's going to be a couple weeks.
PSPS events would be the most recent ones, right, yeah, where we had those power outages, but nothing substantial.
Is there any kind of reference points you can go to find out either what to do or what not to do?
Well, I think we were referencing those historical times, like back at the very beginning, like when we know a lot more right now than we did a year ago. Do you remember those days where we were scratching our head, like, is this for real? Are we're going to be out for a couple weeks maybe, or right, maybe a month, and then it became another 6 weeks and 2 months, and then it just kept, okay, the reality sunk in that we're in this for the long haul. So that kind of reference and thinking has been going on all throughout this pandemic. As far as recovery, I think people are pretty up to speed as to what they need to do. I think the communications all along with families and parents have actually probably gotten better in some fronts because they've had to. You know,
I think the psychological pressures.
Absolutely.
I wrote down World War II. Maybe that was the last time when a lot of kids were under pressures or stresses of this kind of magnitude across the board. Pick a color, it doesn't matter. Pick a community, it doesn't matter. Everybody was concerned in dealing with some of those dynamics.
It's a really good point. And when you think about how our country and communities responded in those days, it involved a lot of public agency partnerships, you know, and so that's something that, we certainly work to continue to build on, but working with Child Welfare Services and Department of Health and Human Services and all the Boys and Girls Clubs and, you know, you name it, part of our recovery is making sure those relationships are healthy and we're addressing, you know, family needs from multiple angles. It's not just the schools working by themselves and these other groups working by themselves. A recovery requires, you know, us to kind of all go all in and kind of provide a wraparound support. So looking forward to
you were so close
that.
To not using one of those phrases.
And then I did.
You teed it up. Oh, man. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:48. Final couple minutes this morning with Chris Hartley. Chris, so what's your takeaway with this big old bill, big old funding, big old funding hole now that the state has? Good, bad, different? You're an educator.
Sure, sure.
Give it a grade.
Yeah, well, I think it's good. It's good on a lot of fronts. One, it's nice to have the resources that encourage both.
No, not good and satisfactory. That's not
what
the
do you
greatest.
Want? Do you want an
A, B, C, D, E?
Oh, I'm going to give it a B plus. There's always room for improvement.
Okay.
You know, but it certainly is. It's a shot in the arm in the right, no pun intended, in the right time. You know, so and the big win for us was to really advocate and get the criteria for participating reasonable. And that was a concern of how these funds were going to be allocated.
Now, is that locked down and solid and ain't going to change, or is that still subject to interpretation?
No, I think it's pretty much locked down. There's always areas to improve upon that, but what it was looking like would have been really difficult for anybody to participate. So we have a reasonable, some reasonable language there. You've got some funding that can help districts move forward. And it showed that the legislator and the governor's office found a way to work together. So there's a, you know, that's a win as well.
With this in place as it is, do you see that this is a precursor for additional down the road? Let's say we have a breakout of Humboldt crud throughout the state.
Humboldt crud throughout the state.
Yeah. Something like this, is this going to become now the template for all, you know, flus, sore throats, things like that? Or do you see that this is a one-timer?
Well, these funds, I think, are specific to this incident. I do think, though, you know, when we talk about health and safety standards moving forward, yeah, I think they're elevated through this experience. And we'll have protocol in place, I'm sure, in the next years and future years that will always be there for health and safety standards. Will it be as severe as wearing masks every day? No, obviously not. But having cleaning protocols and effective filtration systems, all the things we've learned are
the normal
linings.
Stuff that
yeah,
we should have been paying attention
we're
to.
We're going to be a little bit more, you know, on top of things.
See, first aid and health and safety class from high school finally pays off.
There you go.
Thanks for coming by, bud. See everybody tomorrow.